ladies and gentlemen, we do have the MEC of Finance.
And also the DA's provincial leader in KwaZulu-Natal.
Mr. Ziyakhala.
I remember Helen Ziller always saying, we have to get into government sooner rather than later, because if we leave it too late, there'll be nothing left to govern. I'm afraid KwaZulu-Natal is like that, from a fiscal perspective.
You are essentially standing in between the safe and people who essentially want to come in and take.
The people must see that there's an MEC of Finance that's looking after their interest.
I read a very interesting story about you cutting Christmas parties.
The Grinch.
Yeah.
Who stole Christmas.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the DA podcast.
And
today we have a very exciting guest. Very exciting guest. We've got Francois Rogers, Mr. Ziyakhala.
Ziyakhala!
I don't think we're doing it quite right.
Yeah, can you show us?
Ziyakhala!
There we go.
From the soul.
Yeah. Go deeper, Papa.
No, that's I think that's the way it's supposed to be done. Tata, kunjani?
Hi, siphilile wena.
Kumnandi kuba nawe namhlanje.
Hi, ndiyajabulisa nje.
So, you know, it's such an amazing opportunity, because I think we've been really in the podcast just trying to understand deeper KZN. But we had Hanif a while
back.
Yes,
we did.
On the podcast. Did.
When you get to understand KZN, please fill me in.
Oh, okay. So we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, we are now starting from scratch.
My keyword is trying. But Mr. Francois, I mean, it's really amazing to have you here. And, you know, I think everybody knows you with your amazing shirts. Mm-hmm. You always have a new one. So mm-hmm. where do you get the shirts? Please plug us on the shirts.
Interesting story. The reason I'm late is not because the meeting with the president ran late, but I ducked to the V&A, to the presidential company that makes these.
Oh, wow.
I had to buy a shirt for tomorrow. I've got an event and I never bought a spare shirt. So I was with the president, but not the South African president, the presidential shirt company. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you said you met with the president. Can you tell us what you met about?
It's the MTBS. So it's all about budgets.
What's the MTBS?
It's the medium-term budget framework that we're discussing, and some of the challenges that our economy is facing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if I divulge any more, I will be shot. So it's one of those confidential meetings, no phones. Any information that's given to you is handed back. So, I think it was a positive meeting in the main.
So no screenshots will be coming from Witness B or Witness C.
And also, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we do have the MEC of Finance.
Us
in case of that. So, I mean, you know, I suppose it is top secret.
And also the DA's provincial leader in KwaZulu-Natal.
Indeed.
So, Francois, tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Talk to us about how that was and where it all started for you.
Well, the one thing I love to tell people, I'm an only child. Mm. So, no brothers and sisters. Mm. It comes with pros and cons. Mm-hmm. The pros are when you inherit, you're the sole inheritee.
Nice. Oh, nice.
You know, when there's family feuds, I feud amongst myself.
Do I decide between 500 or 600?
But I have two wonderful daughters, which has given me some understanding of family life. Mm-hmm. And I live in Kokstad, a businessman. I started off auditing with the then receiver of revenue, which gave me an insight into money and auditing. Mm-hmm. And then I had an opportunity to open my first business, which happened to be a bottle store, although there were six others in Kokstad. Mm. But interesting to know that 1986, there was no what I would call multiracial bottle store. Mm. So you had a bottle store, but whites went in one door and black folk went in another door, or they stood behind a counter. So I broke the records in Kokstad by having a one entrance bottle store, and a lot of people frowned upon me. No,
wow, mm-hmm.
Who's this fellow from outside Kokstad coming in here and changing the way we do business? What a fish paste! But it worked.
What a fish paste! And what about? I mean, what about your childhood in terms of your upbringing? Do you think made you who you are today?
I think my mother. My mother got divorced at a very young age. I didn't know my biological father till much later in my life. But I think everything I learnt from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
My stepfather was a very unpleasant human being. He was an absolute racist, a misogynist, and a very difficult human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also determined the way I thought politically, you know. We had a trying time in our family because of the two poles between my mother and my adopted father. But, you know, one moves on and you learn and you take from experience. So at a very young age, that would be late 60s, I got to understand what racism is.
Wow. And how do you think that impacted the way that you parent your daughters?
I think it impacted immediately on clearly what was right and what was wrong. I remember at a very young age, Peter Maritzburg, having to go to school on a particular day. And the domestic lady that was our house assistant had to go on the bus with me. And she sat next to me in the bus, and the bus driver said, no, it doesn't work like that. She has to sit in the back and you stay in the front. And she went to the back and I joined her. I walked to the back of the bus and then he stopped the bus again. This was a Peter Maritzburg corporation bus. Okay. And he said, no, it doesn't work like that. Anyway, we got off the bus. It was the first time I was in the media, was about this kid on a bus with his nanny, who'd then got off the bus. So,
sure.
And then going to a cinema, you know, where Chris Pappas is the mayor. Mm. It was the only multiracial cinema in the 70s, and there was a brick wall, and folk of color could sit in front of the wall, and white folk could sit at the back, you know, behind the wall. And those were things that just stuck with me, and I just, you know, you just knew things were, it wasn't lekker.
So, Francois, that's some of the things that made you decide to go into politics. So can you tell us what's your first memory of you saying, cool, I'm now going to put my name forward and join politics?
Mm. I think in high school, I was given the nickname of Smuts, and it was because of politics. You know, my peers kept saying to me, all you do is talk about politics. So eventually I was called Smuts, and it was for that very reason. Then got involved in I loved drama. I really enjoyed drama. I still enjoy drama, and I think sometimes politics is 80% drama and 20% reality, and debating. I got involved there. But it was only later when I was in business in Kokstad that I realized I need to get involved in community work, and I then got involved in the local council. I stood as a ward councillor pre-1994, I was elected a ward councillor.
Wow.
And, you know, was part of a school board. I eventually became chairman, started a new independent school, and that's how my role in society grew, was chairman of Kokstad Child and Family Welfare. And I've enjoyed giving back to the community ever since.
Sure, that's interesting. I mean, what type of, you know, I kind of have an idea where Kokstad is, but what type of place?
We're 13.
Can you tell us more about Kokstad?
Kokstad's on the border of the old Transkei, the Eastern Cape. It's near Matatiel. Mm. Most people, you know, when you say Kokstad, they say, oh, the Wimpy. Because as you drive through Kokstad.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
There's a Wimpy and an engine garage. Sure. So that's sort of people's understanding of Kokstad. It's a small town, rural town, a lot of retail, small manufacturing, but a lot of farming, beef and dairy and sheep. So a great community.
I mean, what made you then open a bottle store? What was, did you have some marketing data that no one had?
No. So interesting story. And I like the capitalism in you because hopefully there's some capitalists listening. And hopefully if they're going to go into capitalism, they're going to have a conscience because a capitalist without a conscience is not a good person.
Correct.
So I heard about a new development that was happening, a new complex. Not the complex that you guys know here, you know? In Shatin, we don't have the... I think we had the local spa, and I think we had Brad Lowe's and, you know, a couple of the other... those rural... and I said, well, do you need a bottle store? And the landlord, who became a good friend of mine, said, yeah, let's do it. And that's how I started my first business, was a bottle store.
Amazing. Sure. Yeah.
So you say Kokstad is sort of border town, Eastern Cape. How did you then find your way to KZN?
No, it's in KZN.
Oh, is it in KZN? I don't know myself.
Just on the border.
We need a map. We need a map on for this border. Podcast.
But another interesting thing, you know, you speak Xhosa.
So
how did that intersection happen for you?
Yeah.
I think as a kid, my father had a construction business, my stepfather, the one who I didn't quite see eye to eye with. And I think from a young age, being on a construction site, I learned quite a bit of Zulu. Some of it wasn't really the sort of Zulu that, you know, on a construction site that small children should know, because I think as kids we pick up all the wrong words. Mm-hmm. And a very funny story I must tell you is the lady that raised me, our domestic, Elizabeth Makatini was her name, the same lady from the bus episode. Fast forward a couple of years, I came home and I can't use the word that I used with her, but it referred to a woman and parts of an anatomy and whatever. And she gave me a jolly good hiding when I used that word.
Wow.
So I realized that some of what I was learning was bad. Now I've forgotten what the question was. Can you repeat the question?
Our mind lives in the gutter.
No. Well, I was just saying the intersection of knowing isiXhosa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be attacked. Yeah. Okay.
isiXhosa.
And you coming to speak about speak.
Okay. Mm. So I think moving to Kokstad and being in business and employing predominantly a folk of color, isiXhosa speaking, that was in my bottle store. I had the Spur franchise, the Captain Dorigo franchise, and various other business interests. And you want to speak, you know, you want to speak to people. And the one thing in business I believe in, I think we can use it in politics too, never tell people to do something that you can't do.
Sure.
And one of the ways you do that is by learning somebody's language. And, you know, I think that's, but I'm not very fluent at Xhosa. Understand it. I'm nowhere near Papa's isiZulu.
That's very interesting. I mean, so talk to us about then entering into politics, because I think what I can hear from you is clearly that your business drove you to understand people and how to meet them where they are in terms of their local language. Talk to us about politics, because I think that's exactly what we want to be able to achieve with politics.
I think it's because I developed an interest in the community and developing, giving back to the community. You know, if you're a businessman, you make money out of a community. Now, you pay your taxes, but there are other ways that you can get involved and contribute. And I think it was through that. And originally when I stood as a councillor, I stood as an independent. And it was the days of the PFP. And it was only when the Democratic Party was formed, which was post-94, just pre-94, that I joined the Democratic Party. And, you know, for years I was a councillor, Lone Ranger. It was me against the ANC. That was it. And I just remember thinking, yo, the structure, the DP structure, and then the DA, I didn't understand what, you know, constituencies were, chairman of a constituency, provincial chairperson. It was all quite, you know, that was fremd for me. And eventually got it under control. And then, yeah, as you were saying, you know, provincial leader, deputy leader, chairperson of the province, chair of finance in the province. So, you know, folk out there who are passionate about the DA and who believe they have a future, if you come from a rural area, don't discount yourself.
Exactly.
Don't think the metros have it all.
Well, that's a, that's a jab at me right over here.
Oh, really?
Or, in fact, that's probably career limiting what I've just said.
So Francois, you have so much experience in politics. As you said, it started in high school, and you know, growing up in apartheid South Africa started your activism so you can make a difference. But we've been hearing these days that you are making trouble in KZN. What's the deal? Spill all of the tea. We want to hear all of it.
Queen Zagala.
Yeah, so, you know, coming into government, I remember Helen Ziller always saying, we have to get into government sooner rather than later, because if we leave it too late, there'll be nothing left to govern. I'm afraid KwaZulu-Natal is like that from a fiscal perspective. The province has been plundered. It's had equitable share cuts. It's really, really struggling. And when you come into an operation like that, in order for you to change bad habits, you have to grab the people by the scruff of their neck and say, this is not going to happen. And unfortunately, I can't grab people by the scruff of the neck. I would like to sometimes, but I've got legislation on my side. Yeah. Interesting to hear in one of the discussions today in the extended cabinet, how people were saying the most senior person in a province is the premier. Except the most important person is the MEC of Finance.
Absolutely.
Because everything has to go through him. And there's legislation, you know. I have the PFMA, I have the MFMA, I have Treasury regulations. And when people don't comply, then I said Section 18, intervention. Now, it's a difficult environment in KZN because it's not one party. It's multi-party. Your MEC is DA. Your MEC of Education is ANC, so implement Section 18, and then they say, you're victimizing us, aren't you? You
know? School teachers
I'm
don't
sorry,
get
I'm sorry, what is Section 18?
Section 18 of the Section 18 2G of the PFMA.
Which is the?
Which is the Public Finance Management Act, which says that if there is fiscal non-compliance, continued fiscal non-compliance, the MEC of Finance must intervene. Doesn't say may intervene. So if I ignore it, then I'm complicit in part of the problems. But it's clearly created, and there's two other departments that are in the crosshairs, which I'm glad to say that the National Minister of Finance supports me.
That's amazing.
Because, you know, if we don't recover financially, then there's nothing left to govern. That's the reality.
Well,
so,
I mean,
so which departments have you given the Section 18 to?
Only education.
Only education.
At this stage.
Oh, lolo.
It's quite interesting that you say that, because I think we would assume that that is one of the most important departments that must be careful about their spending.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Because it's such a critical service they are delivering to learners in that province. Mm-hmm. I read a very interesting story about you cutting the Christmas parties that they had.
The Grinch.
Yeah.
The Grinch who stole Christmas.
Chat to us about that particular measure and why that was important for you.
So there are two funny stories there. The one is obviously Christmas parties are said to departments. There is no money. If you want a party, staff pay for their own party. So that's where social media went wild and there was a picture of me in a Grinch outfit saying, the MEC who stole Christmas. I think that was the
one. Yeah, that was the line.
The other rather hilarious one is my other nickname is MEC Scuftin.
Oh, gosh.
And that comes about in that, for what, I don't know what it is, but government officials go to events. They claim S&T, that's subsistence and travel.
Yeah.
And then they still want to be fed. I said, angege. Siyafune gutle, buisi skaftin. So it didn't make me popular.
Yeah.
And the name MEC Skaftin came out.
That's wild. So, Francois, what does it actually mean when you say you've given the Section 18 to education? What does that mean for education in KZN? And what do you want to achieve by doing that? Just so that at least I can understand it.
I want fiscal compliance, okay. Number one. I want all the wastage to stop. I want all the corruption to stop. I want all the fraud to stop. And what Section 18.2G says, department cannot spend a cent without my approval.
Okay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Right.
Anything that they spend over and above their COE, which we ring fence, that's compensation of employees, they have to come to Treasury. So it's a sort of administration.
Mm. Yeah.
Some people don't like the word. Mm. So lots of people criticized me and said, you don't have the right to put a department under administration. I don't, but I have the right to intervene.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we've done. So for example, the ghost teachers. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I've been wanting to deal with.
Sorry, are there ghost teachers in...
Ooh.
Like Gasper.
You have to explain that because...
So it's people on the payroll.
Okay.
It's not unique to KZN, by the way. Mm. It's people who are on the payroll but don't exist. Sure. And money is being paid. In fact, there's the sort of theories abound that there are syndicates behind creating dummy personnel numbers, giving bank details. It was in the discussion today in the extended cabinet. So what we did in KZN, I didn't say education undertake this exercise. Mm-hmm. Because half of our mess is because of an organization called the South African Democratic Teachers Union, who dislike me, by the way. Mm. I've declared war on the school-going child, which is the biggest load of nonsense. Mm. I want to protect education. That's why I'm doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So we are now leading with the Department of Education a verification process, which is all part of AI. Mm-hmm. And the personnel have to be at a certain place at a certain time with their ID.
Gotcha.
A photo is taken. It does I'm not technically inclined. It does some AI. But
biometric analysis.
Fish-based. Yeah. And then that comes through to us. We check that with Purcell. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing is that I learned is ghost teachers never go on leave.
Of course, because they can't.
But other teachers do go and leave.
Yeah, so you can check.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, Francois, you're mentioning this whole situation with education. You know, for context, to take it back a little bit, I mean, it's after the election, 2024, you become the MEC of finance and you are walking into this role.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can't imagine, you know, what you find when you walk into this particular position.
Mm-hmm.
To even get to a point of a Section 18, as we're discussing now, I mean, surely the situation was not good.
No, it wasn't good. And you know what really frustrates me is you can sit and you can talk to politicians and officials about money. And there's this very glazed, you know, sort of glazed look comes over their face. And there's no real interest and interaction. The one thing I've learned is that in the main, they're not interested in money until there is no money. And then they say, MEC of Finance, where's the money? Seen it with Saturno, you know, seen it with the Department of Health. And fiscal delinquency is a reality. Those are people who are just have no understanding of the value of money. And the historical management process just continues, even though we're facing a fiscal cliff.
Yeah, sure. Francois, it's just so interesting what you're saying, because I agree with you. Often one of the criticisms that we give to the ANC is they just like to throw money at problems. And they don't really look at, you know, innovative solutions on how to do it. So, I mean, coming into KZN, can you tell us about some of the corruption and maladministration that you found?
Look, I don't want to go into too much detail about the corruption, because some of it's still under investigation. Okay. So the National School Nutrition Program tender, that's currently, and there's another interesting fact about MEC of Finance. So if there's a tender and there's an appeal on a tender, it goes to what's called an adjudication, bid adjudication committee, which I appoint. And they report to me.
Okay.
So it makes us independent.
Okay.
We've got that. We've got Scholar Transport. That's also currently under investigation. And just the blatant disregard for money. You know, one of the things that I first saw when I got in was all these SUVs that MECs drive around. I inherited a ministry that had a Golf. I think it was the follow car for my, you know, some of these people want follow cars. When they first told me, do you need a follow car? I said, why am I going to get lost? You know? No, for protection. I said, no, I don't want that. So she had an Audi A6, which they seized the engine. I got to my ministry and it was literally had 12,000 kilometers on the clock. They'd seized the engine on that thing. Anyway, so I've kept my Golf, my white Golf, and I love driving the white Golf. My security detail drive me. And what I really love is when we have events with all the MECs and they all come with their BMWs and Mercedes Benz and whatever.
And they see you in the Golf.
Shimali, we're figuring a Golf, yeah, and they say, hey, rich ass man, hey.
But the Ngabis are there, though.
Yeah.
As we say in Zulu, the Ngabis are there.
Yeah.
And what's your, how do you feel? I mean, it's not an easy position, Francois, to be in. To be MEC of Finance, you are essentially standing in between the safe and people who essentially want to come in and take.
You know, how often have you heard of an assassination attempt on an MEC? I haven't heard of one. How many assassinations have there been of MECs? There haven't been one. I'm not naive. I realize, you know, that there could be some point. But I said to the protection unit, if you have any intel of a security threat, then let's talk about it. But I don't want four people following me around. Very often, I think this protection unit is more prestige than it is protection, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Call me naive, I don't know.
Well, I mean, this goes to the point about the 16 million rand that was spent on vehicles as well when you came in.
That was in 6 months.
I'm keen to actually hear your take on that. How did that actually come about? How did you discover that?
Well, you just walk. Now, when I audited for South African Revenue Services, one of the best things to do as an auditor is when you drive around and you see a Lamborghini or a Ferrari or something, take the registration number down and then you go and do a search and you find out it's a businessman and you go and go and audit his business.
Yeah.
So I hope SARS isn't going to take me on
your Golf.
My own medicine.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
But you know, I just saw the vehicles and I thought, no, man. Because the ministerial handbook then said MECs could drive vehicles to the value of 850,000 rand. But they were clever. So they couldn't buy a vehicle for more than 850. So they went and leased vehicles to the value of 1.5, 1.6, 1.8. And that's how that all came about.
I mean, 16 million in how many months?
Six months.
I mean, the sad part of that entire statement, I mean, I know we're talking as if it's nothing, but, you know, can you imagine the amount of people that could have been served with that money in that province?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Education, health. Mm-hmm. Those are all frontline departments that are in a financial crisis. Mm. We can't be wasting money on international trips, on vehicles, on non-essential items. Mm. Mm-hmm. So that's part of my job, mm-hmm. is to bring about fiscal discipline. It's very painful. But yeah. I have to do it.
Yeah.
And how has it been? Like, what's your reception been since you walked in, tightening belts and, you know, all of the restrictions you're putting in? What is the reception that you're getting from, especially the officials? Because yes. one of the other criticisms is that it's a bloated state. Mm. Everywhere you look, from local government, provincial, national, there's too many staff one person can probably do most of it. So what was your reception?
Well, I can tell you from a cabinet perspective, mm-hmm. not very popular.
Okay.
Oh. But if you in finance and you're popular, then you're not doing your job. The interesting thing is, if you look at the sort of middle class management and below, the support is 100%.
Oh.
If they bump into me in the supermarket, I mean, I don't know everyone, but they'll say, hello, MEC, I work in this department, that carry on doing what you're doing. You're doing a great job. So I think there are people in the structures that can see the corruption and the patronage that still continues.
Sure.
The other interesting thing is that KZN is a coalition government.
Yeah.
I mean, how's that? And how's that going?
Well, yeah, it was going well till MEC Rogers placed education under Section 18. Since then, it's a bit fragile. But I tell you what works for us is that the wolf from Nkandla is at the door.
Yes.
He's knocking at the door with MK. And I think that keeps us, sometimes when we lose focus, we think, well, what's the alternative? The interesting aspect I find of our coalition government is that we do oversight of each other.
Sure.
In the past, you had a one-party province, which the MEC of Finance had to do what the party said.
Yeah.
That can't happen anymore. The Premier can't pick up the phone and say, this is now what you have to do. Because I'll say, that's not what I'm going to do.
Mm.
In the past, you would just be recalled, you know.
Sure.
If the ANC had their MEC of Finance and he or she didn't comply, well, you know, let's play musical chairs.
Sure.
So that's the interesting aspect of a government of provincial unity.
Yeah. I wanted to ask before Leola came in, I think this is obviously, from where I can see, such a wonderful opportunity for you to now come into the coalition government. Yeah. And you're obviously, you're not a popular person, but that's great. That's a good sign of good work in politics. What excites you, though, about KZN? Why did you think taking that role is going to be so important to fixing KZN?
Yeah.
That's a difficult question. What excites me? You know, when you've got no money, I don't know what. Perhaps an evening with my wife where I can have a good Italian dinner. What excites me in the province is bringing about change. And I think importantly that the people in the province of KwaZulu-Natal must see that there's an MEC of Finance that's looking after their interest.
Mm.
So there's nothing more rewarding than somebody saying to me, well done, keep it up, Ndiyabulela. But what excites me? Very little, because all I do... because all I do is fight, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, also interestingly, speaking about excitement, I'm sure, I mean, you were telling us about the MK now, you know, just recently. I'm sure that's not an exciting part of being in this coalition government in KZN.
Well, you know, I've been in the legislature now. I think this is my seventh year.
Wow.
And they are by far the weakest opposition that the province of KwaZulu-Natal has ever had.
That part.
When it comes to money, hulle weet nie wat ons weet nie. What's that saying?
Yeah.
They have no clue. Wow. Sure. There's a wonderful young lady who sits on the MK benches who aspires to being the next MEC of finance when MK takes over. Mm. And she loves telling me she has an MBA. Well, you know, with an MBA and I come to the portfolio committee and I present the unaudited audit report. She says to me, how can I table an unaudited report? I mean, this has not even been audited. Well, clearly it's got to go to the AG, but that's a process. And then, you know, I have to say to a young lady, you perhaps should consider a refund on that MBA because you didn't get value for money.
Shots fired.
But I mean, this is quite interesting because obviously, you know, MK is a very populist movement. It drives a lot of division based on cultural lines. Mm. You're also the leader of the province. Mm. I'm keen to hear, just in your undertaking, what do you think has been some of the interesting developments on the ground that you've seen since their inception?
Mm. Other than being troublemakers, really, and, you know, trying to disrupt, I think that's part of their program. We saw that during the July unrests, before the birth of MK, with Jacob Zuma being incarcerated. They're doing the same with General Mkhwanazi.
Oh, really?
You know, they've put out threats, don't touch Mkhwanazi, you know. Sure. So that is their operatus mandi. What I see, MK has taken over the space that the ANC had. Mm. That normal racist rhetoric is now what, clearly the ANC can't do it in KZN anymore.
Yeah.
Now MK have taken up that radical space, whether it comes to race, radical economic transformation, you know, everything's radical.
I just wanted to dive a little bit into, you know, the discussion around KZN. KZN sometimes scares me, Francois, because of the high amounts of political killings and, as Leolo mentioned, Kabis over there. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, some of the more underbelly of KZN that you maybe have witnessed since coming in as MEC of Finance? Because it's scary, Francois.
Can I give you a story which is close to our heart, not as MEC of Finance, but as leader? Mm-hmm. We had the chief whip of Umgeni, Nhlele Enzo Ndlovu, who was brutally shot in front of his wife and his two children.
Wow.
Now you've had Inkosi Ncamalala Zuma has been arrested, who's the local Inkosi, directly related to Jacob Zuma. Yeah. All of the info, this is now the third murder charge he's facing.
Sure.
With the same group of hitmen. What's unfolding now is really, really frightening. Mm. And I think if you want to see the underbelly of KZN, this is one example. Yeah. And I think of a good friend that I had in the ANC who was the councillor in Umzimkulu, Sindiso Magat, that was also brutally murdered. Mm. It's now coming out that, you know, there was politics involved. In the case of Nhlali Enzo, he was busy exposing the illegal sale of land by the Ngosi and also the illegal distribution of electricity. And that cost him his life.
But I mean, where does that leave young people watching that podcast or reading that story and saying, I want to make a difference in my, if it's a rural, you know, community, if it's a metropolitan, I want to make a difference, but I just don't want to get caught up in that. Where does that leave that young person?
Well, you know, at some stage, as leaders, as politicians, as councillors, we also have to stand up for what is right.
Yes.
If we just say, well, you know what, I can't do it, I respect that. Mm. But there are those of us that need to be in the forefront, which is why I'm never scared to raise issues. Mm. Because the more of us that speak out, the more of us that put principle ahead of politics, the more people will follow us. Definitely. In changing the pattern and the trajectory of crime and corruption in our country.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, public representative councillors, members of the provincial legislature in KZN, who are continuing this fight for the province to rid it of corruption, to fight against these mafias that exist there. I mean, it comes at a total personal cost.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we've, excuse me, we've got some very good MPLs. Even though we're in a government of provincial unity, they're asking the difficult questions. So I often tell the caucus, you guys are doing a magnificent job. You are the only effective opposition in the GPU.
Sure.
Because we're asking all the hard questions, whether it's education, whether it's health, whether it's transport. Yeah. And we'll continue to do that without fear or favor.
Yeah, but putting lives on the line every day in KZN. So you are the MEC for fine. How many seats does the DA have in the coalition government?
We've got 12. 12? 8? Sorry, we were.
Okay.
We're down to 8 now.
Okay, and you have how many seats in the executive? It's yourself and?
In the executive, only 2.
Okay, so it's finance and?
Public works.
Okay. Yeah. And just having 2 DA MECs, I mean, we're already starting to see a difference. What would it look like if we had more seats, more MECs? What do you think the difference could look like?
Well, obviously, you know, the more the merrier, to put it quite simply. But the more seats you have, the more power you have.
Yeah.
Although I must, Martin Mayer, who's my colleague, he's the teacher's pet. I mean, the Premier loves him. So Martin, we often joke.
Francois, that's not you being jealous on the podcast. Yeah.
We need Martin for a state of reply.
Yeah. You can get Martin to respond. But I think you know, and the problem is if you come into a government like we came in and you take over education, health, social development, transport that have been predominantly burnt out financially, you're to turn it around.
Tough.
Is really tough. So, you know, again, we always say if you're going to go into a coalition government, whether it's at a local level, provincial, national level, make sure that you can actually make a difference.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise, you're going to go in there, you're going to damage the DA brand if you're not going to be able to turn things around.
But I mean, you know, you're no stranger to pushing the boundaries. You've placed your nanny on the bus. You've opened the first, you know, single door store. You know, then you've obviously risen in, I think, in politics under very difficult circumstances, and now you have this portfolio. I think the vision, obviously, for KZN is that, you know, we can do more with more support. But before we get there, I want to maybe touch on, I think, what that vision that we see for KZN as a party, what does that look like if we had to, you know, put into words why we think people should continue voting for the DA in KZN?
So, what we want to see is a clean government, a capable and ethical government, a government that can deliver the basic of services. When you open a tap, there must be water. When you switch on a light, the light must come on. You know, our verges must be cut. Our roads must be maintained. Our potholes need to be filled. I mean, I can go on and on. Just look at what we've achieved in Umgeni with Chris and Bones, the deputy mayor. We need to replicate that. Now, we've got the ideal opportunity in the next local government election. The amount of hung municipalities in the province, 40% of our municipalities are going to be hung. The most likely and the most important are going to be the city of eThekwini and the city of Umzinduzi, to name only a few. Now, imagine if we can get into those cities and have a bigger percentage than what you were saying that myself and Martin have on a local government level. Imagine what we could do. Because let's be honest, the Democratic Alliance has written the book about turning local government around. We don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely.
We have to take what was done in the past and re-implement it. And that's the message and the hope that you want to give out, you know, to voters.
And you would say that that's exactly why KZN is in the state that it's in. The maladministration mismanagement of funds, no service delivery, or as we would say, Dololo service delivery.
Dololo.
Would you say that's exactly why KZN is where it is?
Yeah, and I think, again, I think it's a political organization that has held power for too long and just become absolutely blasé, will govern until Jesus returns. Mm-hmm. Well, clearly they got that one horribly wrong, you know. And we must never become arrogant in whatever it is that we do. We are answerable to the voters who put us there. And I think that's where the ANC lost the plot, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing will collapse us.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I wanted to, you know, I'm reminded as you speak of Umgeni, I'm reminded of the late Greg Crumbock, who always used to refer to it as the blue diamond of KZN. But I just wanted to maybe just unpack a bit more, because I think Umgeni is one of the real success stories of how the DA is actually turning around a municipality in KZN. And we are now also going into the local government elections in 2026. So Umgeni, what is the secret of this blue diamond, and what is the way forward to turn things around in other municipalities as well?
Without giving one individual a credit, I think it's important for a leader to take charge. And I think we have that in the mayor. And I think if you look at someone like Helen Ziller, some of the good leaders we've had, John Steenhuisen, it's leaders who take charge, who are not there just to sit on the sidelines. And I think Chris has led by example. And what we told Chris, and what he did so successfully, is just start off by taking care of the small things.
The basics. You know,
Philip Otto put a street light in, cut the verges. That happened within the first couple of weeks, and people could see it. Then you start getting onto the bigger infrastructure. Then you start turning around your finances in the city, because clearly he was also facing a constrained fiscal environment. And he's changed all of that. Now he's building fire stations, enlarging his protection team, the traffic department, and he's going for the bigger projects, whereas he looked for quick wins in the beginning. And that's what people want. But they want to see a change.
And if you contrast that, because if you just read the Auditor General's report, you'll know that there's a lot of municipalities in KZN in big trouble. You are the MNC of finance. You also have an oversight role on some of their finances. Can we contrast that and talk a little bit about what you're also seeing from your side?
Yeah, so I do have certain functions, but it's functions related to finance rather than service delivery.
Of course.
Got to be very careful, because I have an MEC of COCTA who comes from the IFP and he is very territorial.
Okay.
And we also have an MOU, so we understand what our responsibilities are. I have no jurisdiction over eThekwini and Umzinduzi.
Okay.
Those are non-delegated and they deal with National Treasury. Where I see that there's fiscal delinquency or non-compliance, unfunded budgets, etc., then I can intervene. We've also introduced a team to try and assist municipalities in turnaround strategies, financial turnaround strategies, which has proved to be successful. In Richmond, for example, they just got a clean audit opinion for the very first time. Our team was in there to assist. What I do find is politicians or mayors will come and say, we want Treasury to assist, but he has no support in his municipality.
Yeah.
Then I'm sending, at our cost, at Treasury's cost, I'm sending officials into that municipality, working there, claiming S&T, but they're getting, you know, there's no political buy-in. And I've got to the point where in Mkanyakude, for example, they had SEM challenges. I pulled my team out. I said, no. You know, we're not going to waste money and time. We'll find a municipality that needs our help. We'll go in there and we'll assist. So, you know, not only are we just monitoring local government, but we're also there to assist and to bring about change management.
Francois, I think that's incredible that you're able to send a team out and have such a turnaround from not ever having clean audits to having a clean audit for the first time. That is incredible. And that also speaks about collaboration. Because oftentimes, you know, people don't understand the role of provincial government. They know the councillor, they know the MP, but they don't really understand what well, what the important role of provincial government actually is. For example, education. Education has to be implemented by the province. The national department sets norms and standards and legislation. But the implementation in a lot of things happen at a provincial level. And that's the same thing you're speaking about, the contrast of the finances. Can you tell us a little bit more about the collaboration you've been having from your office with, for example, local government and with national government?
You know, the one thing that irks me is, and I remember this from when I was a councillor under an ANC-led council in Kokstad, is the minute province comes in, they say, no. We're a different sphere of government. Don't tell us what to do, you know. We've got our own. And that irks me because you're right. We're one government. We shouldn't be working in silos, you know. We should be collaborating exactly as you say. And where I find that there are mayors and city managers or municipal managers who want to bring about change and want to work with us, we're able to bring that about. But we're going to have to get to a point, I believe, in this country where the legislation is going to have to be reviewed. Because local government is a mess.
Yeah.
And unless there's more accountability at a local government level, we're not going to change the situation.
What are some of your thoughts? I mean,
that's my opinion, sort of party opinion. Let me just put that in there.
Yeah. Well,
is it career limiting?
Well, what's some of your thoughts? I mean, I've got some strong views on this as well. I'm a ward councillor. I see the challenges. What are some of your thoughts in terms of legislation that we have to review and why?
Let me tell you, I'm not sure what ward you come from, but I love telling people that when I was a ward councillor in 1989, I think I was first elected.
Oh, we weren't even born.
I used to deal with a resident complaining about the neighbor's cat coming and defecating in the yard tree that had fallen over. That was like the sum total. Nowadays, you guys, you engineers, you sanitation specialists, and you know what? What frustrates me is the lack of accountability at a local government level. And exactly what I've just unpacked now, you know, you've got so much legislation and it doesn't cross-pollinate and give somebody the ultimate say in local government. So if you have a municipality or a city or whatever that's failing, what ultimately can you do? Well, you know, national government is it Section 100 that the National Treasury can go and intervene?
Yeah.
I look at Umzinduzi. Umzinduzi has been under administration, I think it's for about 9 years now.
What?
And
it's
worse now than what it was. So, you know, is it legislation? I believe it is. Is it political will? I think that's also part of the problem.
As an MC that obviously sits on a provincial level, when you see these failing municipalities, what is directly connected in terms of the failure of service delivery?
Well, again, a journalist phoned me a couple of days ago about Umzinduzi, just short of 100 million rand on infrastructure they had to return to National Treasury. And I said, well, you know, it's a non-delegated, you must phone National. He just said, well, what's your opinion? I said, well, to me, that is criminal.
Yeah.
Because that is money that's given to a city by National Treasury to develop infrastructure. It could be sanitation, it could be electricity, it could be roads. That is all services that generates revenue. You know, people don't want to pay for something if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's treason, you know.
Yeah.
We should bring back public stoning, you know. And when officials don't spend their infrastructure, we stone them.
Yeah, we should just clarify that is your personal opinion.
My personal opinion.
But I'd like to get into this a little bit because we often hear that departments have returned money to Treasury. And then they say, but we don't have budget to implement and do service delivery. What on earth is that, Francois? Why do departments return money and then turn around and say, we don't have a budget? What is going on? It's crazy.
So this conversation also came up yesterday in Budget Council. And I think part of the problem is the lack of capacity. And it's capacity, skilled capacity, engineers in that particular infrastructure field. So much so that the only three provinces that are identified with the necessary skills is KwaZulu-Natal, the Western Cape, and Gauteng. Mm-hmm. The other provinces really battle. But then you have to ask yourself the question, well, who do we blame? Mm-hmm. We blame whoever was the government of the day, because if you employ a palooka, then you're not going to get the job done. Again, accountability, consequence. That's what we need to see.
Yeah,
we haven't seen much of that in under the ANC.
We really haven't. And I think, you know, we also need to really be honest that people are just frustrated and people are just really getting tired of the same old, same old. And, you know, as now we head to the local government elections, I think, you know, we had Hanif Hussein the other day, the mayoral candidate for Eteguini. But as we now move into the space of local government elections, I think people are kind of like, but when is it going to all change? So what do they need to do to be partakers of this change? Because, you know, listening to your story, you are two in this coalition government fighting against odds, you know, with, you know, everything that's happening, assassination attempts. But I think South Africans also have to stand up. We can't sit back and simply just say, I'm not voting. Or, you know, it's all corrupt. Everybody's part of the same problem. We need to stand up, Francois.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sitting at home as a voter or as a resident, complaining and being a, what's it, keyboard critic on
keyboard
social
warriors.
Media, keyboard warrior, that's not going to change society. It might elevate your challenge, but it's not going to change a government. And the only way to change a government is through the ballot box. And people have to start understanding that. Our responsibility is to talk about where we've succeeded, why we've succeeded, and give people hope that if they do, in fact, start voting, start supporting the DA, we can introduce those changes to their neighborhood. That's the reality.
That's so important.
To the people of Eteguini, just to maybe just hear from you as well as the provincial leader of KZN about Hanif, just
I think Hanif Hussein is the man for the job.
The one
thing about Hanif, and I served with him when he was provincial chairperson, I was deputy leader at the time, is if Hanif puts his hand up to do something, he's 120% committed. There's no problem with that. So much so that he's actually become an irritation to me now. now that he's mayoral candidate, he's wanting meetings with me. I must discuss Eteguini finances. And jokes aside, but he is shows you how committed he is. He's having meetings with me, asking the right questions. That's what you want. You don't want a mayor there who's just on a placard, waiting for the day that there's an election.
It's like you said, when you elect leaders, they have to lead and not just sit in on the sidelines. So talking about leading, as the leader in MEC Finance, what sort of things have you put in place, measures that you've put in place to ensure compliance moving forward? Because it's been a year and a half now of since the national elections, and you still have about 3.5 more years of your term, God willing. What have you implemented so far that will change how the KZN finances look?
Don't say God willing, say ANC willing, because they're the ones destabilizing the GPU.
Oh, no. I don't want to use them in the same sentence, brother.
There's one particular MEC that's become a problem, a thorn in the side of the ANC.
Okay.
So a couple of the things I've introduced, and it's all fiscal compliance. One of the biggest challenges we face in government is in supply chain, in the tender process.
Of course.
And we are currently putting an electronic tender system in place, which will be run by Treasury. It'll take the human interaction out of it. And I believe it's going to be a winner.
Okay.
It's going to take away a lot of the problems that we're currently facing. When I talk to people, I always say, if you're in the market for a upmarket secondhand SUV. Stick around, because once that procurement tool hits the ground, there'll be senior officials needing to offload their SUVs because there's going to be no money on the side. Mm-hmm. A financial recovery plan is something we've put in place. We've got work streams to relook at how departments operate. Mm. For example, like I said to you, ghost teachers in the Department of Education, that is something that that we're undertaking. Mm-hmm. And making sure that compensation of employees, the money is ring-fenced.
Yeah. Mm.
They can't touch it.
Yeah.
It can only go to salaries. Because we can never get ourselves into a position where we can't pay salaries.
Yes.
So you know, those are just some of the quick wins. I'm afraid finance is never sexy, but it's just a methodical, you know, it's like walking up a steep hill. You just got to keep going one foot at a time.
Francois, you mentioned these things you're putting in place, but how did you come up with these solutions? What steps did you have to take to say, cool, we're going to use this AI, it's proven to work? What fact base, you know, what do you place your facts in? Where do you get the information from?
So one of the things I'm really lucky with, and I probably wouldn't have taken this job if it wasn't for the KwaZulu-Natal Treasury. Mm. We really, really have a good team. Even when I sat in the opposition benches, I said to the team at Treasury, you guys are, and I used to joke and say, you are probably better than the Western Cape.
Well,
it never really got me into trouble. I still say it now at Budget Council. But, you know, give credit where credit is due.
Shout out KZN Treasury.
There you go. I think the problem in the past was they were dominated by whoever ran finance.
Okay.
Whichever. I don't do that. I have an open door policy, and I say, if you've got ideas, I don't care who you are in Treasury, you come and talk to me, let's discuss it. And I think one must be open. I've had discussions with some senior financiers, not in our province, from the Western Cape.
We don't mind export.
Where I've also been given some great ideas. But I think often as leaders and as politicians, we tend to think we know it all.
Correct.
I do not know it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm always open to suggestions and ideas.
Yeah. It has to always be expert based, because we can't be experts in everything.
No.
And it's so important to have stakeholders where you can take advice from experts who know exactly what's happening. Go ahead, Donovan.
Yeah, I wanted to chat about the two, I mean, big revenue spenders in provincial budgets. I think the G20, the national government actually posted some data yesterday, education, health being the most the biggest drivers of your budget. In KZN, what does that look like for you guys? What have you implemented to ensure that actually every child, first of all, gets a quality education and every patient receives a quality healthcare?
Well, look, all I can do is make sure that they've got the necessary money to be able to do that. It's not my job to look at the skills of teachers and to look at the skills of health professionals. At this stage, I've inherited a Department of Health and a Department of Education that, when we took over, was projecting to overspend by 9 billion rand.
Sure.
Billion rand.
Sure.
I managed to cut that down. I think our close out, we overspent by 158 million.
Wow.
So we cut that right down. But what these departments have now done is they don't pay their suppliers. So they go and put their invoices, you know, accruals, what we call in finance accruals. So that's a new challenge, and that's other systems I've now put into place dealing with accruals. What I want to do is I want to stabilize the budgets within education and health. But in order to do that, I need to establish a correct baseline.
Yeah,
because some of the figures we're getting, in nonsense, we need, and that's what we're busy with now.
Yeah.
Because once we get a true baseline, then I've got to relook at the way I do my budgets.
Yeah,
we've inherited this historical, you know, education. You spent 40 billion last year. We'll add on CPI.
Yeah,
health. You spent 35 billion. We'll add on CPI. We can't do that because I'm not going to get out of this mess. Once I have those baselines tied down, I'm going to have to start taking money from there, from there, from here, and protecting our frontline departments. Yeah. That's the only way we're going to get out of this mess.
I mean, I think it shows in a way how important your role actually is in the provincial executive, that if you have, first of all, if you're spending the money on the right things and you're not stealing of it, you're not, you know, making yourself insolvent by not paying your suppliers, you are able to deliver the services on the ground to the people. But I think essentially where you're coming from, and I think this is so important for people to understand, that the DA believes in the separation of the state and the party. So you're allowing the administration to do the work that they need to do. This is why you have a great treasury, and not get involved in the political battles. And then on your side, you are able to provide the political direction and leadership that is required for that department. What is your advice then to young people wanting to, you know, become part of the Democratic Alliance? Maybe there's a chartered accountant that wants to become an MEC. What is your experience? What has your experience taught you about leadership in politics, especially in KZN?
Well, you know, we're such a vibrant organization, the Democratic Alliance. I mean, we interact with other political parties, and there is no party that's as vibrant as the Democratic Alliance, and that's as progressive as the Democratic Alliance, and that actually cares about people. I think, you know, that just makes us so different from any other political organization. And if there are people out there, I spoke at a Dawn event the other day, and one of the questions I was asked about, you know, women in leadership. And I said, the reality is, if you want to be a leader as a woman, you need to take that first step.
Put your hand up.
If you want to be a leader. And there's enough quality leadership in our province and good old honest people who will take you under their wing and who will nurture you and help you along on that process. I mean, I've got three people that currently I'm nurturing in that process, because I'm not going to say that because I don't know where this broadcast is going.
It's
time for young leadership. Let me just leave it at that.
I can promise you, we will not be able to replace you,
you will.
Talking about mentorship, because I agree, it's so important. I need some advice, Francois. I'm in a portfolio committee where people are just there to play politics. They're not there to actually look at what is necessary for education and the children of this country. What advice would you give me? How do you handle that, moving between politics and people just playing political games to actually saying this is what we're here for? Because I'm struggling to reconcile my mind, you know, to say I am here for the betterment of our country, but they are not. They are just here to play political games.
So, interesting. So let me give you what I think is part of how I'm making inroads from an MEC of finance perspective, because people don't listen to me. I mean, in cabinet, I've got two sleepers who generally battle to stay awake in cabinet. When I talk about money, then they really sleep. You know, in the Democratic Alliance, we've got a saying, what's it? On message, in volume, over time. Now, I'm using that in finance. I say the same thing. Over and over again. And it's starting to resonate. And I think that's what you've got to do. And I think you've also got to use the tools of communication to the broader voter as to what your purpose in that committee is versus what some of the other politicians are doing there. You know, I think you've got to make people aware of that, and you've got to keep driving that. But don't ever despair. I sometimes think, really, have I got to say this again? There is no money, but I say it. You know, there is no. And the biggest word I have that I use is no. And I repeatedly say no.
No.
Mm-hmm. When MEC Buthelezi asked me, the king wants to go to Malawi. He wants to take 300 Amabutu with him to an event in Malawi. Will I find it? No. You know? Can I do this? No. Mm-hmm. And you just be consistent.
Yeah.
And never give up.
It'd be interesting to hear from your daughters what type of father you were, because normally fathers can't say no to daughters.
I was lucky. God in his wisdom didn't give me a son. He gave me two daughters. So.
So talking about your daughters and family, how do you manage your time? Family time and work time. How do you find a balance, or do you even have a balance?
It's difficult, and it's got worse with obviously this position now. But you know, if you committed to something, you can make it work. Mm. I was lucky in that being a businessman in Kokstad and being a counselor. My kids, I got them through school and then off to varsity. Mm. And only then did I start taking on bigger responsibilities.
Okay.
It's very unfair on my wife, who's a political widow. But I think, you know, we've also learned to understand.
It's a new term.
That's a new term, yeah.
And of course, I consider myself a migrant labourer because I work in Pietermaritzburg. My home is in Kokstad. Wow. And about twice a month, I get to go home. But Rita often will come through to Maritzburg.
Okay.
My youngest daughter, who has two kids, lives in
Pietermaritzburg. Yes.
Oh, what is your favorite thing about being a granddad?
Reading Roald Dahl.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I love
Which my younger daughters, my youngest daughter doesn't like. But she says to me, they call me Bompa. She says, Bompa, you're going to give these kids nightmares.
Because of Roald Dahl? Oh, no. I remember Roald Dahl in school.
Well, you know, Francois, I maybe just want you, because you are wearing two hats, the hat of an MEC and the hat of the provincial leader of KZN. For people who are perhaps in KZN, right, and live in KZN and have looked at the city or municipality that they are in and are really trying to negotiate where to from here, you know, should we move to another, you know, province or another city, or, you know, if you do have the ability, leave the country, you know, for those of us who are still still fighting for this country, what is your message to the people who have those thoughts in KZN?
You know, I always think back to a friend of mine who's late now, and he always used to say to me, never think the grass is greener on the other side.
Mm.
Water your own grass and get it greener. And, I think that resonates with me. It's very easy to run away from your problems.
Mm.
Wherever you're going to go, you're going to have some problems.
Mm.
If we stay here and if we committed, you know, as South Africans to bring about change, we've done it. You know, look at this city. Everybody talks about this city. I mean, I've spent 2 days here now. It's just packed with tourists.
Mm.
Those are tourists that bring foreign currency in here, create jobs.
Mm.
Now imagine if we had five cities like Cape Town in South Africa.
Mm.
Imagine where we'd be. You know, if we get eThekwini functioning under the new mayor, Hanef Hussen, Cape Town will become the second best city.
No, I agree. Because you can actually swim in the ocean in KZN.
Guys, you can swim in the ocean in Cape Town.
You'll freeze to death.
So I think you're definitely right. The grass is never greener on the other side. And I think it's very important. I think many of us who are still in the country still believe in the country and are still fighting for the country. And we have nowhere else to go. So we got to make this thing
this
work.
This is
it for us.
This
and we can't be scared.
Yeah.
We have to be courageous.
Yeah.
And even if your courage is putting an X in a ballot box or stepping into the arena, that is what is enough and that is what is needed.
Well, maybe they'll also vote for you if you sing them your favorite song.
What is your favorite song?
There's one thing I don't do, that's sing.
It's a safe space.
It's a safe space.
So I'll tell you a funny story. Another funny story. In the opposition benches, there was a debate, a finance debate that I was doing. And things were looking bleak. So I started off by singing the first few lines of Creedence Clearwater Revival. I see a bad moon rising.
Well,
the house collapsed. So. But I don't sing. But here's something. My eldest daughter lives in Malawi.
Okay.
They've been there for 3 years. Her husband is an agricultural engineer specializing in irrigation.
Mm.
Earning a fortune. Mm. They're hating every minute of it.
Wow.
They cannot wait to come back to South Africa. And all things being equal, they will be back here in Christmas and they'll be staying here. So it's not always. And money's not everything.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Money is not everything.
I think we know that because I think a lot of us that's in politics, we do it not because of the money, but because we want to be able to see a future that mm-hmm. we are proud of mm-hmm. and that our children can also experience the glory days of South Africa. And yeah. and that remains our vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Francois, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
We really, really appreciate it. Thanks for coming through.
Yes.
And we hope to continue to see the amazing work you're doing with finance in KZN and I think leading KZN to the next local government election as well with many victories to come.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
What do we say?
Guys.
Ziyakal!
Ziyakal!